revolution.
The future of radio.
You're weak. Unsure of yourself.
Actually,
the fact that you possess a sense of morality and we do not gives us an evolutionary advantage.
CyberstationUSA.com.
And if history has proven anything,
there's another problem with TV, believe it or not.
It is that evolution always wins.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Neil Haley Network's Lyrically Lime Show, and I'm excited to welcome to the show my host, Peyton Leonard. Peyton, how are you? We were talking about your music last week. Now we have a really, really interesting guest because one of his shows he's on, I just streamed. It was phenomenal, but he's been in a lot of interesting projects, and he's going to take the time to speak with us while he's still shooting, which is phenomenal. So, Peyton, go ahead and introduce our guest.
Awesome. Yeah, we have the renowned Michael O'Neill. Michael, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you.
Peyton, thank you. You and Neil both for having me. It's a pleasure to get to join you.
Absolutely. Awesome. And when I was talking to him off air, Peyton, I was like, some of the stories he has, he sometimes doesn't see that because he's constantly working. And I think that's defining Michael in so many ways. But go ahead and ask the first question, Peyton.
Awesome. So, Michael, did you always want to be an actor?
Peyton, I didn't. I came to it late. I'd never done a play through high school or college. I took a degree in economics. Yeah. And had an opportunity to go west to California. I grew up in Alabama, and I really wanted to explore the rest of the world. And that seemed like a good place to start. And I got involved with a little Shakespearean troupe out there, and I was really terrible at it. I mean, really bad, you know, because you got to start somewhere. And that's sort of the hook that got me.
So what age were you, Michael, when you first started acting?
Well, it's post-college, so I was probably 24, 25. I mean, I guess that's not that old, but, it took a while to kind of figure it out. A lot of people would say, oh, well, try it. Oh, you won't make it, you know, try it. You won't. Oh, thank you. No, you won't make it. So I heard that a lot in the beginning, and, I got a resentment, you know, and you don't know me well enough to tell me if I can make it or not. So I literally sort of bit the stick and hung on until they started letting me work.
Wow.
All right, Peyton, next question.
Yeah, so when was your big break?
You know, I think the biggest break for me probably was The West Wing, getting to do that, Peyton, because, I always said of the acting community, it was a kind of a membrane, you know, and sometimes you would pass through and you would be in the community and then you would kind of get pushed back out. But The West Wing put me inside the membrane and kept me there. It was such a great show. The cast, you know, that remarkable collaboration of great writing and great acting and, you know, Aaron's work. And being involved with that really helped me sort of find my footing as an actor and go, okay, this is going to be okay. We just need to keep working.
Was that a reoccurring role on The West Wing every week?
Well, no, it wasn't every week. It was recurring. I played the head of the Secret Service. And so whenever something came up that either threatened, if there were a crisis or something threatened the president or a member of the president's family, then my character was featured, you know, prominently. But it was an opportunity, you know, to work with John Spencer and Allison Janney and, you know, Brad Whitford and Richard Schiff, you know, they were Martin Sheen. I mean, they were so generous to me and accepted me, you know, into the family. And from that point on, it was just an e-ticket ride. You're probably too young to remember what an e-ticket ride was, but that was considered a great ride at Disneyland.
Yeah, that was very cool. I remember kind of Michael, but not completely for sure. You know, and so that's very interesting. Go ahead, Peyton, the next question.
Yeah, so what are some of your latest projects? I know you were in Scandal, you were on Jack Ryan. What other projects were you on? Have you been on lately?
You know, I did a little film out in California called The Stand, playing a North Dakota rancher who got swindled out of his livestock, and his daughter comes back from Afghanistan to, you know, try to help him collect himself and see if she can right the ship. The most prominent thing in the cycle right now, though, Peyton, is Clemency, this film that Alfre Woodard stars in, that won the Dramatic Award at Sundance. And that's beginning to put its feelers into the world. I think it comes out on December the 27th, but there's a lot of heat around that film. It's quite a powerful story. Aldous Hodges and Richard Schiff and just a terrific cast. Alfre is phenomenal in it. So that's, you know, in the past, and I'm working on, and Jack Ryan, of course, is finished now. And that was a wonderful, because I got to work with John Krasinski and Benito Martinez. And, you know, there's an old saying, if you want to play class baseball, play with class baseball players, you know, they'll make you better. And that was my experience with both John and Benito. They just were so honest and so present. That the obligation was not just to bring your A game, but, you know, to be there with them, to go, you know, to if you're falling, dive. And so I dove in with them.
So that's two amazing experiences. Let's talk about Alfre. Tell us about working with her.
Well, you know, I've worked with Alfre once before, Neil, many, many years ago. And it was so apparent to me that she is a rare talent. The wealth and depth of Alfre's emotional life is so compelling to me. I mean, I would say she's a national treasure. I don't know that she would agree with that. But there's something that Alfre has that I respect a great deal, and it's a kind of moral suasion as an actor. I believe her credibility. I believe her ethos for a thing, her pathos for a thing. She just moves me deeply. So she actually reached out to me and invited me to join her in this cast. And I said, listen, Alfre, I'll wash your car if you want me to. So certainly I'll show up to act in something with you. But I can't begin to tell you how subtle and how compelling and how heartbreaking this performance is in Clemency. It's just, you know, she does more than hold up the mirror of life. It really, she goes there and she takes us with us. You know, she takes us with her. So I don't, you know, I can't say enough good things about her, both as an actress and as a person. I just think we're fortunate to have her in this time.
Now, speaking of Jack Ryan in season two, were you a fan of season one getting into the
Very much so. You know, it was so compelling to me, the journey that they took us on. And, you know, Amazon has resource. So they make, they go where they need to go. They shoot where they need to shoot. They write what they need to write. And certainly, you know, Krasinski and Wendell Pierce, that's a very complicated relationship that those two actors have created.
Yes.
You know, and I love watching smart actors. And they're just so smart and quick. And the stakes were so high in that first season. Yeah, I found it really compelling. So when I got invited to be a participant in season two, I sort of landed on my chin. I was running so fast to get there.
Wow, awesome.
He has a big role at the end that we can't say. So you stream it. So really got to check out some.
Yeah, we don't want to spoil anything for, you know, diehard Jack Ryan fans. But it you know, it was fascinating to get to work with him and to see, you know, I play a Senator Chapin, and there are political ramifications, you know, for intelligence gathering. Those intelligence operatives, they want to go and get it. And this old senator's like, wait a second, you know, there are certain things we can do and can't do. And it was a nice tension, a nice conflict that they built. But the, you know, it's a compelling story. He's tracking a nefarious shipment of arms into the Venezuela jungle, and goes down there, and he ends up being a, you know, realizing that this whole thing goes deeper, and so the journey they go on is global. And Amazon goes global. You know, they shoot in Russia, they shoot in London, they shoot in D.C., they shoot in New York. I mean, they just don't spare any expense to take you on the ride.
Now, Peyton, just to go back to give us the next question that you've heard so far, learning from Michael, what's the next question you have for him, Peyton?
Just where can we find more info? I'm very curious.
I'm sorry, Peyton, info on what when you say that?
Like, just more info about you. Like, how can we, where on the internet can we find more information about you?
Well, you can always follow me on Instagram. You know, I'm this cool. Michael O'Neill on Instagram as opposed to that Michael O'Neill. And and Twitter at this Mick O'Neill, because I'm Irish. It's funny, Peyton. I've tried to keep my nose to the grindstone. You know, in my in my business, I sort of feel like you're a shark, and if you stop moving, you perish. So I've always looked ahead. I've not much looked back. So I don't know what kind of information there would be about me as a career person. Just someone who tried to be as honest as he could, given the opportunities that he was given. You know, my very favorite quote is one of Maya Angelou, comes from one of Maya Angelou's poems, and it was, you know, when I had a little, I did what I could. When I got more, I tried to do better. So I'm just trying to do better.
That's awesome.
Now, when you talk, so his wiki is the thing. There's a lot of information, Michael, on your wiki that's true.
Is there?
Sometimes there's not. But there's a lot of information of so many different projects you've done. Trust me, and amazing projects that everyone's fans of, that you were guests appearing in or something, where they're just, again, they're all just like amazing. So you kind of, do you kind of, when you pick your projects or decide to audition on certain projects, is it based on like the anticipation of how good the show is? Are you looking at that in your decision-making process?
When I can, Neil, absolutely. You know, I have three daughters, I have a family. So sometimes the dictates of the economy determine what I go to work on next, if I'm honest about it. But, you know, I've been really fortunate to work with, you know, David Kelly and Aaron Sorkin and a litany of really, 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 you know, I worked on The Unit with David Mamet. So I've worked with a litany of really fine writers, and that it starts on the page for me. So I think in that regard, somebody trusted me and said, you know, you can give him the keys and he won't break it. And, that's what I'm looking for more than anything else. I'm looking for good writing. I'm looking for a role that cost me something to do. You know, I think as an actor, there's an obligation for you to be invested in it and for it to cost you. There are a few things that I've refused in my career to play. You know, I won't hurt a child, and I won't play a racist, because I grew up with racism, and I know the damage that it does. So I just, it's not where it's, you know, that's not where I want to spend my life. That's somebody else's job.
So one of them that was big that you were in was Dallas Buyers Club, right? Did you get the opportunity to go? Did you get to go to the Oscars and everything for that?
You know, I didn't go to the Oscars with that. And it's interesting. I did go to the Golden Globes, Neil, and Matthew did something that touched me greatly. He had just won, and there was a huge receiving line, and, you know, people coming to congratulate him. And he saw me come into this room on the other side of the room, and he stopped what he was doing, and he came back.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
Cyrus Mission USA.
Cyber Station USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. Cyber Station USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA, always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide. Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
Me and he said, Michael, I know what you did. I just want you to know I appreciated it. And he turned and went back to the line. And as an actor, a character actor particularly, I was so taken aback by the generosity of that move, you know. Although I didn't go to the Oscars, I certainly appreciated the fact that he won, because I've rarely worked. You know when an actor's gotten free, you can see it.
Yes.
On him. And I stepped into that scene with him. I was looking for Matthew when I stepped into the hospital room, and I couldn't find him. And the remains of him was standing there in front of me, because he was so committed to the role. He lost so much weight that he was skeletal in a way. But utterly free. Any impulse, any thought, any action, anything that came to him or through him, he was free to do. And I went, oh, my. Oh, we got to go now. And I just tried to go with it, really.
If you look at some of the things that Michael's been in, Peyton, it's amazing. Bates Motel, Traffic, Dallas Buyers Club, Seabiscuit, a lot of them just really well known. With the West Wing, we talk about now again, Jack Ryan. I could go probably into your whole filmography. What was your biggest role of the most known thing you've been in? What would you say?
I get a lot of response from Seabiscuit. It was the first film after 9/11 that I think celebrated the resiliency of the American people. After that film, people leapt to their feet to applaud. And I know it's a wonderful film, and I know that people were deeply moved by the film. But I think there was something about saying yes. You know, we've had a hard, hard blow, but we're going to come back. And that's what that film was about, you know, the underdog and the resiliency to, you know, to press forward even against tremendous odds. So that one, and it was also probably the closest to me. You know, I had three small children. I played Red Pollard's father in the film, and the idea of having to give a child away because you couldn't support them was just devastating to me. So there was a lot in that film that meant a lot to me. Grey's Anatomy, for a totally different reason, because I played such a broken man in that, and there's a lot of feedback that I get about that from young people, you know. But Secondhand Lions, because people love the film, you know, and Transformers. You know, there's an age group there that's like, wow, you were Banachek. And I'm like, yeah, I was. And you really want to see what's in this briefcase. You know, and they laugh and keep going. But, when you asked me about that, I just realized how bloody fortunate I am to have gotten to work with the people Yeah, really, truly.
And that's what you talked about before, the different name drops of the opportunities of working as one of those actors. And then the opportunities will come, Michael. And what do you want to accomplish most in your career? What's your goal throughout? What do you want to attain? What's something that you say, okay, I've done all these great shows and films. What do I want to attain as an actor next?
You know, it's funny you say that, Neil, only because of I've played a lot of, you know, difficult or bad guys, tough guys, you know, and I've been hoping to play something closer to what I believe I am, you know, or and have a little more moral authority in that, and a person you can rely on. And that seems to be happening a bit more for me lately. So I would really like to explore that band of color. You know what I mean? Let it feed me. You know, I'm conscious of my daughters a lot and what they see, you know, and the legacy that I leave them. I hope that at some point they'll be able to look and go, yeah, that was my dad. You know, my dad did that.
Mm.
So I guess that's the biggest thing for me is to try to play it as honestly, whatever it is, as honestly as I can. So you don't look at it and go, oh, he's doing some schmacting up there, because I've done that and I know what it looks like and it's not pretty. But there's kind of a little bit of an obligation because, I got to work with Pacino and I got to work with Bobby Duvall and I got to work with Michael Caine, you know, and I got to work with a lot of wonderful, wonderful, wonderful actors, Krasinski and John Krasinski and Matt Damon. You know, and Pal Holbrook, who's I feel like is a mentor of mine, and they all put something in you. They all pour something in there. So you want to reflect the gift of what they've given you about what the good work looks like.
Absolutely. But for Jack Ryan fans, tune in to season 2 if you've not yet, and you'll know how important this character is in the story. Just have to say that. That's all I can say. But tune in. And that's got to make you feel great, is how important you were in that story, right?
Well, they let me contribute. Yeah, you want to be involved in the turn, you know,
you'll never be forgotten in that character, because again, anybody that's involved with Jack Ryan is big in their mindsets for how much they love the show. So remember that. Just giving you that plug of wow factor.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, they were great to me.
All right, Peyton, our final question in Lyrically Lyme always is an adversity question. Go ahead, Peyton, with your adversity question. Peyton has Lyme disease, and she's a musician and also a writer, and she's gone and dealt with certain challenges. Go ahead, Peyton, with your question for Michael.
Yeah, so like Neil said, I have Lyme disease, and I was diagnosed in 2013. And so I've been dealing with it these past 6 years, and it's definitely been a challenge, because not only that, like I was dealing with some other stuff and dealing with my mental health, and all these different things were coming out, and it was just really hard. But I was able to kind of persevere through it because of God and just my family and my church family. And something I always love to ask my guests is, like, in your life, whether in the past or the present, like, what is something that you had to overcome that was really hard for you? Like, it could have been like a physical illness, a mental illness, a trauma, you know, whatever comes to mind.
Right. Peyton, the first thing I want to say to you is that you will remain in my prayerful thoughts.
Thank you.
Because I have some experience and, with the long arc of restoring your health, and you know, it's a journey. I find when I hit my knees, I go, thank you for all of it, you know.
Yeah.
I'm learning. I've struggled in my life with addiction, so I know something about the importance of recovery. I know something about the importance of the tenacity of the journey. You know, once something is part of your life, as Lyme's disease obviously has been part of yours, and it affects your mental health. It affects a lot of things. Yes. It affects your family relationships, obviously, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I find, honestly, Peyton, the biggest medicine for me is gratitude. I try to be exceedingly grateful for the opportunities that I have and the family that I have and the friends that I have and for you and you. So I'm good, you know. I think I live an extraordinarily blessed life. Somebody asked me the other day if I had faith. I said, I don't think you can do this business without faith, quite frankly. You know, that's what we move forward on. And sometimes you have to be really broken to rise out of the ashes.
And, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Well, that's a really great point. And that, again, this is really a great interview to learn about you, Michael, and what you're trying to accomplish and where you're going in your career. And right now you're filming Council with Dads, right? Is that correct?
Council of Dads, yeah.
Yeah, and for NBC, and that should be coming out in 2020, right?
Spring of 2020. That's our hope.
All right. Well, I appreciate you calling. Thanks for coming on. That was a great show, guys, and thanks for calling.
Peyton, thank you
so much.
All right, thanks, guys.
Of course.
All right, Terry. All right, thanks. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. All right, that was Lyrically Lyme, everyone. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Neil Haley Show's Caregiver Dave Celebrity Segment on Excited Welcome Program, Caregiver Dave. Dave, how are you? And you love these guests, right? Especially singing. That's
absolutely
a big, it's something that gets you really excited. I saw it on your social media. You were pumped up to talk to our guest today. And it's because you're a singer yourself. You're a musician, right, Dave?
I am.
Yeah. You never mentioned that on the show. Mention that real quick.
Well, you know, I started out by singing in the shower, and then my mother was in a senior center, and there was an old guy doing karaoke and stuff like that. And so one day he shoved the microphone in my face because he was asking for requests, and he says, "Yeah, you sing it." So I got up there, which shocked me, and I started singing. I got a standing ovation. I've been singing ever since.
Wow, a natural. Okay, so go ahead, Dave, introduce our guests, because I know our listeners are really excited.
Well, so excited to have a contestant on The Voice, Royce Lovett. And I heard you, Royce, and you are pretty awesome. You've got such a presence, and your voice is amazing, and apparently the judges like you as well. So welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, man. This is incredible. I really appreciate being here.
So how far are you going, or did you get on the show?
I lost my knockout. I did the blinds, won my battle, lost my knockout. But I am so grateful and just ready to keep pushing from this amazing wave that's just come from being on Team Gwen and NBC's The Voice.
Oh, yeah, you don't have to win these things to get any, you know, deals or what have you. I'm sure you have benefited so far just in what you've learned and the opportunities that are coming your way as well, yes?
Completely. Since being on The Voice, one of my songs, Sunday Morning, hit a million streams on Spotify. And
wow.
And I've just been blown away. It's been awesome.
So tell me, Dave, I wanted to kind of jump into the thing. When Royce got on The Voice, and then he had such an inspiring, song he sung. How did your life change? Like, people started recognizing you and stuff, right, Royce, after that happened, right?
Completely. It was pretty hilarious. I was in the dentist office with my youngest. well, not my youngest, but both my boys, actually. They went in to get a cleaning yesterday. And while they were getting the cleaning, I ended up taking 10 pictures.
Wow. That is awesome. So you're a celebrity, and it's nice to be a celebrity, but it's even better to not be a celebrity that everybody recognizes you, because then you got the paparazzi, you got no privacy, and God forbid you should end up like Princess Di. So doing very, very well. But I want to go back way before that. When did you first realize you were a musician or started singing or picked up an instrument?
Man, my mother had music on all the time. She sang and sang, and I think that's exactly where I got it from. Like, she was a worship leader, singing at community centers, and she had me singing in church at community.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA, always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide. Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
Centers all summer I would be somewhere doing Michael Jackson impersonations and singing and dancing. So I think I always knew I could sing, but I never really knew it, I guess, until I think around middle school, when people were like, yo, you should sing.
Well, you know, so many great started out in church, like Whitney Houston. So you're in good company, my friend.
Oh, man. There's just a passion and soul I think I got from being in church and just loving to bring people together. That's why I kind of chose the style of music that I sing. And that's the biggest reason why I chose Gwen as my coach, because her style just is so universal the diversity inside of the music that I write is definitely the kind of lane I want to be in. So,
I bet your mom is your biggest fan.
My mom is my biggest fan. But you know what? You know what, man? I have to say that my wife is just completely amazing, because she told me to quit my job in 2009.
Wow.
And do music full time. And she also pushed me to go out and do The Voice. And so, like, every single, like, cool decision I think I've made during my music career has come from this beautiful woman, Hannah Lovett, that I married. Like, it's been a blast, like, making music and seeing where music will take you, touring and traveling and meeting folks, and all the way up to the biggest thing I've done, being on NBC's The Voice. It's just been incredible.
Now,
so happy for you. You know, they say behind every great man is an even greater woman.
Agree.
Yeah.
So, Royce, let's jump to specifically when you were singing in church. Did you kind of know you had some talent once you started singing?
Oh, man, like, I don't know. I knew I liked it because during that time I was singing in church, I wanted to be a professional boxer. That was the dream.
That's funny.
But I knew, I knew I liked it, but I didn't really know I had it until some folks was like, yo, what you do is a breath of fresh air. And that was just right around the time of middle school. I picked up a guitar and I started rapping and singing while playing a guitar. And that just kind of became my voice. And it became the only thing I wanted to do. You would see me walking around town, walking around school, holding my guitar in my backpack. And just like any moment I had, I was writing music and writing songs and playing for whoever would listen.
Oh, wow.
That's
amazing.
It's definitely an amazing thing, Dave, for sure. Go ahead with your next question, Dave.
So let's talk about your voice audition. First of all, you said your wife talked you into doing it. Were you nervous? Were you scared? How did it go? Obviously, it went well.
Man, I was all of those things. The voice actually contacted me 2 years in a row, and I did not respond because I thought it was a scam. I was like, this is too good to be true. Can't be real. Delete email. And after doing a TED talk at Berkeley, I got another email and my wife opened it. And she was like, hey, this is real. You should check it out. And I was still timid about it because I thought, you know, what if I lose? What if are my fans going to think I'm less talented? Like, what if like people don't, you know, what if the whole thing just backfires, you know? But my wife was like, yeah, my wife was like, listen, you're going to be in front of people from all walks of life on this amazing platform. Millions of people watch this show. And you already know that you have talent and like God put you here for a reason. So why not do the show? Like they called you, obviously, that they think you can sing. So.
Yeah.
I went out and I hit them back and flew me out to the tryouts. And it definitely was intimidating, like being in that tunnel before they call your name and walking out there on that stage that you know there's four pillars of the industry sitting in front of you. And you're wondering if your voice alone is going to make them turn around to see how far you can go in this vocal competition. And when I saw Gwen Stefani turn, I definitely knew I was in the right place at the right time singing the right song.
So that's a cappella, right? There's no accompaniment.
Man, it was just it was just amazing, man. Like knowing that I don't even consider myself a vocalist. And for her to hear the energy and hear the tone and hear the character in my voice to make her want to turn around and see who was singing this was just amazing.
Cool. Yeah.
Oh yeah, Dave. When you talk about specifically enough, what would you talk about specifically, Dave? Is that and the whole process is getting on stage. Once you auditioned and once you performed, how nerve-wracking was it to perform in front of those judges?
Oh, man, it was definitely nerve-wracking. It's the biggest thing I've ever done. I've been on big stages. I probably performed in front of the most is about 7,000 folks on tour. And
wow.
I think that it was a whole nother ball game. It really was. Like, you knew the cameras was on and the judges were just listening to the character and the tone and the notes that you were hitting. And it made me really get in my head. It made me really question my talent, question my ability, question the choice of being there.
Yeah. The who am I? Who am I that I should be here on the voice? Who am I that they would like me? You got to get out of that space in your head. Yeah.
Yeah, you do.
And I did.
Yeah, and I learned something in that moment. Like, I remember right before they called my name, I got this like gut feeling that said, remember this moment. So I touched the wall and I felt the temperature, and then I counted the light that was above my head, and then I counted the rows of people that was in the stands, and this like peace and calm kind of came over me where I was just like, I'm where I need to be, and this is a moment that I'm going to remember whether I get a chair or not. This is amazing.
Yeah, you had a God moment.
Yeah, man, and it was Definitely. It was sweet. It was sweet, and I got on that stage, and I think the only other nerve-wracking thing was the first thing that was going to touch that mic was a note, not a "Hey, how y'all doing tonight?" or not a
"Yeah,
y'all ready to have a good time?" but a singing note, and I think that was a little intimidating to me because I was like, I don't know if am I going to hear myself well enough? Is it going to be a bad note? Is it going to be a good note? Like, and,
so what was your favorite moment in the whole process as you went on and on and on? And I assume you got less and less nervous, or did you?
I did. There was moments where I got in my head again and then got less nervous again and got in my head again. But by the time I got to the knockouts, like, I felt so good. I wasn't nervous. My favorite moment was Gwen Stefani looking at me and saying, I don't care about the high notes. I don't care about the runs, Royce. I want you to just do exactly what you do because I'm a fan of what you do.
Wow.
And those words, like, it just really changed the ball game for me. After that,
that do something to your self-esteem?
Oh, most definitely did. After that, she said, think about your favorite artist. Your favorite artist makes you feel a certain way. Your favorite artist isn't the best vocalist.
Mm.
And she was just trying to remind me of, like, hey, make people feel.
Exactly.
How,
yeah.
You know, make people feel something right now. Like, don't worry about all this technical stuff and the runs and the big notes. Make people feel something.
And you didn't turn that around in your head and say, oh, my God, she doesn't think I'm the best vocalist.
No. In my head, I was like, oh, my gosh, she gets me.
Wow. And so in thinking of that feedback and that stuff, were you always able to take criticism well? When people give you feedback or ideas of what you should do?
I don't think so. I don't think I was always like that. I wasn't always built like that. But there was a moment in my life, I remember the very first time I was allowed to go to a club, a jazz club, when I turned 18, I started doing open mics at some jazz clubs in town. And I remember the first night I played, the house lit up. It was so awesome. And then I came back the next week and I played a song that wasn't quite finished yet. And the response was different. And as I was walking off the stage, the drummer said something to me at the exact time everybody in the room was quiet. He said, hey kid, no more works in progress on stage. And that hit so hard, I halfway felt embarrassed, but I was so excited that he shot it to me straight. And that made, ever since then, that's made I've taken that with me everywhere, into the studio, on tour, on stage, and I really think that piece of advice, learning to be teachable in every moment, has really helped my career excel these 10 years, to be able to do it full time for 10 years.
Wow. That's amazing. What are you doing currently? What kind of projects are you planning?
I did not walk into NBC's The Voice without a goal. So the minute I knew I was going to be on the show, I started writing. I started recording songs. So we have songs inside our pockets just waiting to release. Our first release is a song called Good Morning, and we're going to release that at the top of the year. And it's just very inspired by my experience from The Voice. Has that reggae vibe that everybody was really digging. And so I'm really super excited to be releasing that. I'm booking a tour at the moment and just really pushing towards the goal of supplying these new fans and these newfound support that I have with quality music and show dates and tours. A lot of doors have opened up while being on The Voice and since being on The Voice, and it's just been amazing.
You know, I forgot to ask you, did you open with, at your audition with one of your originals, or did you do a popular song that everybody knew?
Well, I wanted to open with original, but that was against the rules. So I did a song that I knew for years called 911 by Wyclef and Mary J. Blige.
Okay.
The song is very old. I wouldn't say it's a popular one. But they loved it so much that they asked me to do it for the blind audition, and they got it cleared. And, you know, I was very excited to be doing something that almost feels like I wrote it.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple. Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
So what happened when they first heard one of your originals?
They weren't able to play any of the original things, but the production team, like, it would be really cool to walk into one of the team meetings or something and to hear folks, like, saying, like, yo, I listen to Everyday Problems and it's amazing, or, oh, yo, I listen to
That's got to make Sunday you feel great.
Morning, yeah. And I love it.
Yeah, so what is your ultimate goal? As a musician, what do you want to attain?
Man, my ultimate goal, yes, is to be able to be financially secure and see the world and stuff like that with music. But to be honest with you, I'm all about bringing people together. Like, I think there's a message of love and unity and humanity that music can deliver better than any politic, better than any speech or sermon at a church. And I just really love seeing that. Like, we always take a moment at my shows and we turn the house lights on and I ask everybody to look around and I'm like, yo, you're standing next to someone that you probably have never eat dinner with, like someone that you didn't even know was here, because my shows are so diverse. It's different skin tones and different backgrounds and different economic systems and different ages. Like, and that's the kind of music I want to make. I want to tell stories and I want to bring people together. At the same time as making some money and eating good food and traveling the world.
That's man, you're changing the world. You're changing the world. Good for you, brother.
Thanks, man.
One of Dave's questions is a very, very important why he's on this show. So, Dave, go ahead and ask the question. He's a caregiver, and he'll tell you the whole story and then ask question marks.
Okay.
So, yeah, my wife 23 years ago had this headache for like 4 days, wouldn't go away, turned into a stroke, lost her speech, became paralyzed. All of a sudden, I'm her caregiver. I didn't even know what the word caregiver meant, and now I am one, you know. So we had a rough 2-3 years going through the grief process. But finally, you know, we reinvented ourselves, realized that if God didn't want us around anymore, he would have taken my wife. And so she reinvented herself, and so did I. And now I travel the country just talking to caregivers, helping them to not make the same mistakes I made. So I like to ask everybody, and so far everyone on this show that I've asked has got a caregiving story. What's yours?
Wow, man. I just want to say first, that is amazing. Like, I'm encouraged by that. There's a song in there. Like, I love that story.
Oh, wow. You guys got to connect. Are you an L.A. guy, by the way, Royce, or not? Are you?
No, I'm in Florida, but I travel to L.A. frequently, so I would love to connect.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I got a relative in Miami as well, West Palm Beach, actually.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I don't know if I have a story like that. I do know that my wife's grandmother, before she passed a few years ago, was going through dementia. And I, being a full-time singer-songwriter, I had a lot more free time during the day, so I volunteered to just kind of to be there and to help as much as I could, because my mother-in-law, she's an amazing woman. She does a lot, and there were so many like awesome things that I think I learned through that process, because I didn't really get to meet my wife's grandmother before she started in dementia, but she still had these amazing stories about her childhood. And my mother-in-law would say that those stories were like told even more like vividly during this time, that, you know, when she wasn't going through dementia, she was a lot more shy to tell those stories. But those stories were like told even more vividly, and they're just so encouraging just to hear how she showed love to people and progressed and moved and grew a family through times of segregation, and the way she grew up, and those stories were just so amazing. And I think I will always keep those things with me. And I think I did learn something from right. caring for her. I'm sorry, you
yeah,
said
that's
something?
Great. You know, my mother and my mother-in-law both had dementia, and it's amazing how they can remember way back these stories, but they can't remember what you just told them 5 seconds ago.
Yeah.
Well, I got to get you guys to connect, Royce, you two, and you guys got to come up with a song. That's, you guys are going to have to come. So Dave, you're going to have to reach out to Royce and get and make that connection, both of you guys, and
all
see
right.
how you guys can collaborate.
Yeah,
one thing,
that'd be amazing.
Yeah. One thing Dave has not told you is he's on a lot of TV shows all the time, documentary, author. He's everything in between. So definitely you guys need to connect for sure. Now, Royce, best place we can find information on you right now so we can listen to your music and everything. Where's the best place we can go?
If you go to my website, royclevitt.com, that has everything you want to find. But for most folks, it's a lot easier to just follow me on Instagram at @RoyceLevitt.
Exactly. It's always about social media. And that's where you can connect everyone to everywhere they need to be is social media. Because that's where everyone is everywhere. But again, that's the important thing. But Royce, you have a tremendous story, a tremendous mission, and you are humble about what you want to do. You're not thinking of yourself. You're thinking of how you can serve other people through your music, and you should be commended for that.
Stay that way. Don't let it change you.
Amen. Thanks, man. I just want there's so much to say about that. Like, I just really want my boys to grow up and to see the world a different way and to actually, like, care for people and see a need and feel the need and never give up on their dream. So that's why I'm living the way I got to live this way so my boys to see a clear example of how to do it.
All right. Well, thanks for calling. Great show, Dave, again. Thank you, Royce, and take care, guys.
All right. Take care, guys. Thanks so much.
All right. God bless.
God bless to you, too. And that's the Caregiver Dave celebrity segment, everyone. We're back to the Neil Haley Show and the Total Celebrity segment. I'm excited to welcome the program from the WWE, Paul Triple H Levesque, Executive Vice President, Talent, Live Events, and Creative. Paul, thanks for calling, and I appreciate you coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the evolution of wrestling, professional wrestling. I'm a former pro wrestler, wrestled in the minor leagues, worked down south with Lawler and Burt Prentice, and got trained by Charlie Fulton and went through the whole process and saw how the business was at a specific point in time. And it's evolved so much, even since I've been out of it and looking at it. And I really credit you in a lot of ways of taking pro wrestling and the evolution of it through NXT. And what you've been able to do in your creative mindset to take it to where it is today and how wrestling has come back in a lot of ways to newer talent and new development than, let's say, other eras like the Attitude Era or even Hulk Hogan's era. Wouldn't you agree, Paul?
I do. You know, look, everything evolves over time, and I think this is no different. And as you talked about in the generation that you were actually doing it in, the differences between what that business was then and what it is now is incredibly different. You know, Vince McMahon took a little regional territory with 30 little fiefdoms all over the place and turned it into a single entity global empire and media juggernaut, you know, but the content of it, the in-ring content, the WWE itself is known all over the world. And, it's one of the most popular, you know, sports or performance arts in the world. We have over 1 billion social media followers. So where the business has gone and what it has become. But now it's evolving, and it's constantly evolving. And NXT is that next level of that. The fan base is so big now for Raw and SmackDown. The spectacle of it is so big that there is room to take a step back. And, you know, I've kind of equated Raw and SmackDown to Hollywood big, epic blockbuster films that the whole world watches. NXT is a bit more like Broadway.
Yes.
It's a lot less glitz and glamour, so to speak, but the performance of it is just you on that stage when the bell rings, and it is you and your opponent in that ring doing what we do. So the in-ring content becomes much more important. And, you know, for some, for the most passionate fans, that really resonates with them. So it's another connection point, another deeper dive for them. And, you know, the great thing is that it's proving to be popular with a lot of people, not just those diehard, passionate fans, but fans all around the world. NXT Live on Wednesday nights on the USA Network for 2 hours has become must-see television for a lot of fans around the globe.
I think what you've been able to do and where the brand has developed, it saw – you know, competition sometimes is a good thing, not always a bad thing. It is bringing other wrestlers and opportunities. The way you looked at NXT when you first in the development phases of it and taking it as a developmental compared to what it is today and finding the best talent in the country and developing them and and honing their skills is a lot different than the days when I grew up, when I'd have to go wrestle in small little towns and then get the opportunity to wrestle in the territory, versus today where they're on stage, they get the bright lights, the TV, the professionalism, so that when they finally do step into the WWE, SmackDown, or Raw, they're ready. But now, because of how they've learned this stuff and they've gotten the platform and the fan base, it's become a huge thing. And that's, again, as I said, I credit a lot that to you.
Well, thanks. I really appreciate that. Look, I never understood when I was coming in, and probably much like you trying to get into the business, that it was almost seen as like this secret society, so to speak, where no...
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts, CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop-shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.